Rising Kate Casey. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you guys have had a great week. This week, I've been nuts because two of my kids have had to take a test to do junior lifeguards at the beach. Now, I live near the beach. I was never in lifeguards, but we live here, and my husband says the kids have to be able to swim in the ocean. So in order to participate in this program, they have to take a test, a timed swimming test. Let me tell you, I've been an absolute nutcase all week trying to train these kids to make it in time. So if you saw me at the pool this week and you saw me screaming at my daughter, telling her that doing a backstroke makes her look like an 80-year-old woman in the pool, my apologies. I actually am a great parent. But then it made me think about how I'm actually kind of like the dude in the relationship, because in most cases, it's the father that's at the sports field yelling at their kids. And I know that it's me. And here's why. I used to coach high school field hockey and lacrosse. I may have talked about it before, but I am pretty certain that I scarred those children for the rest of their life. In fact, I ran into one of them recently at a restaurant, and she was sure to tell my husband on the way out that I still live in her nightmares. Basically, I would tell them that they were all pretty lazy. I would run next to them and tell them I could run twice as fast as them. I would use really absurd analogies when I would try to explain the importance of defense strategies. I am totally coming clean. I'm just a little bit intense when it comes to sports. My sister refuses to play doubles tennis with me or singles tennis because she says I hit the ball like I'm going to murder somebody. I just can't dial that back. So you can imagine my delight when my son won the football championships and I nearly ripped off a stranger's earlobes because I was so excited that they won. So sometimes I think, my God, if there were television cameras following me, they would edit this to make me look like I was Serena Williams' father. I don't know, someone in sporting who has a parent that's an absolute lunatic. That would be me. So that's what's been going on this week. And I have to say hello to Valerie, who saw me last night at the testing. And as I was about to explode into tears because my kids actually passed the test, she noted that she listens to the show and she loves to watch Southern Charm, Teen Mom, and The Real Housewives. So hello to you and to all the people that love to watch Southern Charm. This is an episode right up your alley. I was really excited to talk to Patricia Alchul from Southern Charm. Patricia is like the grand dame of Southern Charm. Whitney, her son, created the show, and she is absolutely hilarious on the show. She's got a butler, Michael. She lives in this unbelievable mansion designed by one of the most famous interior designers in the country, and she's always got a martini in her hand. She's my kind of person. So I love to talk to somebody who's been on a reality show who sort of seems like a one-dimensional character and learn more about their lives. Where did they grow up? Where did they go to school? What was their life like before they were on reality television? So I was really excited to learn about the time that she spent in Washington, D.C., her career in art, and also what it's been like since her son created this hit show. Because truly, everywhere I go, someone asks me what I think about Southern Charm. And then Patrick Muldoon happened to date two of the cast members of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. He's been an actor for a long time. You've seen him in a ton of movies. In fact, my friend Steve texted me this morning about this infamous death scene in Starship Troopers. So you've seen him in a bunch of movies. He dated Lisa Rinna and Denise Richards. So I wanted to ask him what it was like to be on the show this year. And he's got some funny stories. And then Brandon Alvarado, I've roped him into watching some reality shows before. And he told me that I had to watch the show on HGTV. Now, I don't typically watch HGTV, as I mentioned later, unless I'm at the nail salon. But I have to say, once you kind of get dialed into one of these shows, it's hard to turn it off. And it makes us wonder, both Brandon and I, what happens to the people that appear on HGTV shows? Do they buy the properties that they've been shown on the television show? Is it really their property that they're renovating? Or is it actually a relative who has way more money and they're just people who really wanted to be on TV? I feel like I need to do a tour of the HGTV headquarters to kind of get some some perspective on what's really going on. And by the way, did I mention that Tariq El Moussa from HGTV lives about a mile and a half away from me? I've asked him to come on the show, and I feel like he's blowing me off. So if you guys see him at CVS, maybe see him at Home Depot, if you see him in the hallways of Lowe's, please tell him that I live down the street, I know where he lives, and I would really like to drop by his house and do an interview. So again, this week, Patricia Atchell, Patrick Muldoon, and Brandon Alvarado. So here we go. You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. I am beyond thrilled to tell you that this week's interview features none other than Patricia Atchell from Southern Charm. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, and what a nice introduction. Thank you.
So I want to learn a little bit more about you. I understand that you were born in Jacksonville, but you were primarily raised in Richmond, Virginia?
My father was a surgeon, but he specialized in revamping hospitals and making them more modern. So I was really only in Jacksonville for, I think, 3 or 4 months. And then we moved, you know, back to Richmond. And so I grew up there from the time I was a baby until I was 20.
And then you went to college in Washington, D.C. at GW, which I love. And you got your bachelor's and your master's in history and archaeology. What made you go to school in D.C.?
Well, you know, I had been to a girls' school in Richmond. And I went away to a co-ed boarding school for, you know, my high school years. And I love Richmond, but I didn't want to spend my entire life there. And I thought going to Washington would be an exciting place to live. And also, I got married when I was 20. So I just had a year of college at GW, and then I was married. So I was kind of there for the duration. And my husband was head of Dun & Bradstreet and was going to night school to get his MBA. So, you know, I stayed there for, I think it was over 20 years.
What was it like to be there in the 60s, especially the late 60s?
Well, you know, I went to grad school there, and then they gave me a job. I started as an instructor, and I was teaching kids just a couple years younger than I. And it was the beginning of the age of Aquarius, and I would go to class, step over kids having a sit-in in the hall. They were smoking marijuana. They would take over the president's office. It was really kind of flower children at that point. And it was also a little difficult because they had to get passing grades. If they flunked out of school, they would be inducted into the Army or the Navy. So I had a lot of extra work because I was teaching art history and archaeology, and art history was a requirement for liberal arts. And a lot of these guys were football players or, you know, fraternity guys, and they would get a D-. And so I did not want them to go to Vietnam. So I would end up giving them special projects, spending hours after class doing these projects with them so that they could get a passing grade. I patterned myself after Jacqueline Kennedy. You know, I would wear kind of knockoff Oleg Tessini suits and little heels. And my hair was teased into a bouffant. I probably looked like I was 50 years old. And the rest of them were in bohemian clothes and hair down to their rear ends and flowers in their hair and barefoot, a lot of them. And this is kind of what I had to deal with during that period.
Did you have any students that went off to war and never came home?
I didn't follow through with most of them. I mean, I had classes with 200 in them. Some of them later in later years wrote me letters, you know, because I was teaching there for maybe 8 or 10 years. I taught up until Whitney was born, and then I taught part-time. But a lot of them went on to get further degrees. A lot of them went into the art business. While I was there, I became an assistant and then an associate professor, and I took it all very seriously. I instituted new programs for them at GW, which they still have. The in Europe, which was 6 weeks, and it went to the major capitals of Europe and studied, you know, the art, sculpture, painting, and architecture. And I set up a program for housewives so that they could come one day and spend 3 hours, you know, for a lecture instead of having to go to campus. And I did it for veterans. I went to the Veterans Administration at night and taught for 3 hours. But I would haul my projector and my slides and my notes and would drive into Washington. And it was basically desolate way back then, and would go into the Veterans Administration building and teach this class. Towards the, I would say, 76, 77, I was given the opportunity to put together an art collection with no financial constraints. And I worked with a scholar, an art history scholar, who incidentally ended up being the Altschul professor at Barnard. She was the head of the art department at Barnard. And she and I put together a collection. And as I said, money was no object. And I flew all over the United States, went to Europe, bought paintings, watercolors, sculpture. And since money was no object, people would see me at auction buying all these great things. And so they would say, would you look for a Winslow Homer for me? Would you try to find me a Martin Johnson Heed painting or something of that nature? So I ended up buying art for, I would say, the 6 major art collectors in American art at that time, and also museums. And it was, we were doing multi-million dollar painting deals. So it was very lucrative and exciting. And I loved every minute of it.
What was it like for you, the transition, once you had Whitney? Did it become any more difficult to teach? And Hun, tell me a little bit about how important it was for you to continue to work.
My parents instilled into me the importance of education, number one, and always being able to take care of yourself no matter what. My mother was a stay-at-home housewife. My father was a surgeon and a diplomat, and was kind of a soldier of fortune before he married my mother. But she thought that it was vitally important to have something to fall back on no matter what. I don't think she expected me to have the career that I did or to be that engaged, but it was something I wanted to do. I liked the challenge. I liked the scholarship that was involved. I loved the travel. I loved meeting people. It was very exciting. And I couldn't imagine just sitting home and not doing something. Plus, I really enjoyed making money.
Yeah. I know that you've been married 3 times. What is your advice to people on maintaining such nice relationships with exes?
Well, you know, we were married 15 years, and he was a very important member of the financial community in Washington, and he required a wife who entertained, would go on golfing trips with he and his clients and so forth. And I, on the other hand, was flying off to Paris to go to the, you know, French-American exhibit of Impressionist paintings, where I had found 2 of the paintings that were in exhibit. So there was kind of a, how do I want to say it? We were going in opposite directions, and nobody should have had to relinquish their lifestyle for the other. You know, yeah. I was not about to give it all up. And he really didn't require that I give it all up. And, you know, we worked very nicely for 15 years, but the paths separated at that point. And he had different requirements, as did I. And Whitney was, I think he was 10, maybe, or 11, I can't remember, when we got separated and divorced. And we both lived in Georgetown. We split the time exactly down the middle. I would have Whitney Monday and Tuesday. He would have Whitney Wednesday and Thursday. And then we alternated weekends. And we were very accommodating. If my time came and it was Father's Day, I certainly wasn't going to withhold Whitney from spending that day with his father, and vice versa. And we talked all the time. Our houses in Georgetown were just blocks apart. Whitney went to Georgetown Day School. I mean, you just have to make the decision to be amicable and work together, because having children is your main, you know, consideration at this point. And everybody benefits by kindness and cooperation and accommodation. I don't think Whitney was traumatized by the divorce.
Yeah.
And he is a great father and a lovely man.
When did you move to New York?
Well, you're skipping a husband, but that's okay.
Well, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about him.
Well, I mean, I kind of retired at that point, because my time with him was spent on, he had a rather large motor yacht, and it was fully staffed. And we basically were on the boat for 1.5 years. Sailing, they call it the loop. You go from the intercoastal waterway all the way up through the United States to Prince Edward Island, St. Lawrence Seaway, Great Lakes, Mississippi. You know, I did that twice. It took 1.5 years.
Wow.
And it was most interesting. I'm so glad I did. But there's nothing like living on a boat with somebody to find out that you're not compatible. He wanted to give up his citizenship and move to Ireland.
Wow.
And that was the reason why I did not go with him.
I see.
He did not want to pay taxes. He did not want to, you know, he had some kind of arrangement with his ex-wife. Well, it took me a couple of years to get a divorce. I had known Arthur for 20 years, because he was considered one of the top 20 art collectors in the country. So anytime he came to Washington, he would always call me. He would come. I had a townhouse in Georgetown, and I was a private art dealer as such. And he would come by and see what paintings I had and tell me his requirements. And I would go to the National Gallery, the Smithsonian. I would see him. We were always friendly. Saw him up in New York at the Met. So I guess we'd known each other 20-some years. So I met him again at the, I think it was the Peacock Room that was redone at the Smithsonian. And he was there. And he said, I've been trying to get in touch with you. And I said, well, I've been on a boat for 2 years. And I basically retired. And he said, every time we had seen each other, either he was married or I was divorced, or I was married and he was divorced. But this time we were both divorced. So he asked me to come to New York. He had some paintings at the Metropolitan Museum for an opening, and he invited me to that. And I went up for the weekend, and I guess that was it. You know, he said, don't go back to Virginia, which is where I was living. And so we were together from that time on, 10 years.
10 years. And then what made you move to Charleston?
Well, after Arthur died in 2002, I stayed in New York. I had a big house with him out on Long Island. And Rupert Murdoch lived across the street from us in Center Island. And he said, you know, we pay the highest taxes of any place in the United States. And I kept thinking, you know, I'm living up here in the North. I miss the South. He was selling his house, and Billy Joel at that point was thinking about selling his house. And I decided I'll get a place down South. I'll sell the country house. I'll get a place down South and get an apartment in New York. We had a big apartment when Arthur was alive. And I thought, well, I'll just go down South, spend 3 months, you know, when the weather is bad in New York, and mostly live in New York. But I just found that I was spending more and more time here, and it was becoming onerous having to go up to New York. And Whitney used the apartment more than I did. So I thought, what's silly to have an apartment that you're not using? So I kept it for about 5 years, and then I sold because I just wasn't using it. And I love it so much down here that, and I go back to New York, but visit friends, but I'm always happy to come back here. I would never want to live there again.
Tell me a little bit about Whitney creating Southern Charm and how you became involved.
Whitney had done independent films, and some of them had been in film festivals, and he hit it big with a documentary on Halston, and he sold it to Showtime, and that was about the time I moved down here, and he became acquainted with, you know, the guys. And he knew Cameron. I'm not quite sure how he knew Cameron, but he said to me one day, and you know, Whitney had not really lived in the Deep South, and I consider Charleston the Deep South, not like Mississippi or Alabama, but certainly much more so than Virginia. And he was fascinated by, what shall I say, he was fascinated by several things in terms of the surroundings, the architecture, and the ambiance of Charleston is unique. you know, the history, the different types of homes, the gardens, all of that. He thought it was just a beautiful, visually beautiful place, and it was peopled by wildly eccentric characters that were raconteurs. They were funny. He just found it totally different, the people, the place. And he thought that it would make a fascinating either documentary or reality TV show. The emphasis was mostly on guys behaving badly. He always said he wanted it to be a combination of Downton Abbey on one hand and then Animal House on the other. And that's kind of, in a way, I like Abbey aspect of it and try to uphold that in a Southern, you know, the Southern version on a minor scale. And the guys take care and the girls take care of Animal House.
Well, then, of course, obviously it changed a little bit and all of these girls, you know, became part of the show. And it seems like you, for some of them, you've really developed like a nice relationship. It seems like Cameron, for example, has grown quite close to you. Are you surprised by the relationships that you've created doing the show and also surprised by how popular the show became?
Well, I mean, I have no understanding of reality TV. I never watched it. You know, I'm either looking at the news or Turner Classic, or I hate to say it, the Hallmark Channel. So it became a different genre that I wasn't really knowledgeable about. And Whitney said to me, because the film crew is here, and, you know, all of a sudden there are all these people walking on your really recently painted floors and cameras, and they put sticky tape on the wall and to hold cords. And Whitney said, well, look, Mother, why don't you just be on it, relax, be on it for 5 minutes, and, you know, that's all you'll have to do. And I'll figure out, you know, some other location so you don't have to have it in the house. Because I have museum quality furniture.
I believe it.
And paintings and porcelain, you know. And here are all these people clompering around and piles of equipment and everything. So that's what he said. 5 minutes and you're done. And we know how far that went.
Who has been this most surprising celebrity fan? I know that Lady Gaga had a quote about looking at you was like looking in a mirror.
Well, I was very flattered. Quite frankly, at the time, I didn't know who Lady Gaga was. I hear celebrities that are on Watch What Happens Live talk about, you know, how they love Southern Charm. I guess quite a few of them watch it.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's like we're like space aliens to them.
Are you surprised by how much people have fallen in love with Michael, the butler?
No, because I think that he deserves all of the accolades. He is so smart, number one, and is so accomplished. And, you know, you can't, not everybody could do what he does, because he anticipates problems and solves them. He actually really runs the house, because I'm still involved in a lot of business ventures of my own, you know, mm-hmm. And I started this company for animal rescue, but I'm still on some boards. And I have kind of a complicated financial situation, you know, which I'm dealing with money managers and lawyers. And I do a bit of buying and selling myself at auction. So I've had a secretary for 16 years. And Michael, I guess, has 17 years now. And I like to surround myself with knowledgeable, accomplished, professional people mm-hmm. when, you know, I need them like that. And so Michael trained as a butler. This is a big house. I have a complicated life. It doesn't look like it, you know, it looks like all I do is drink martinis, but that's far from the truth. And he handles, so much. He handles everybody who works for me. And if you were to add them all up, you know, it's housekeepers, it's cooks, it's secretary. No, she's an executive secretary. She basically, but they work in concert. I have contractors with a house like this that's historic. You know, there's always something going wrong that needs to be fixed. The contractors, the workers, gardeners, pool men, pond guy, you know, painters, whatever. The list is endless. So he takes care of all of that and makes sure that the house is running smoothly.
Does Whitney have to beg you to participate in filming, or are you game for it?
I'm game for it because it's easy and I don't exert myself. You know, I don't have any drama in my life and try to keep it away from me as much as possible. But with this group, anytime you get them together, there's going to be something. You never know what.
Do you think of the cast of them as almost like kids now, now that you've spent so much time around them?
Do you mean in the Arrested Development sense?
we don't know if Whitney will ever have kids, for example. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But is it safe to say that Palmer might be a beneficiary of something? I don't know. She might be in the will, because it seems like you and Cameron are very tight.
Cameron and I are very close. I enjoy having friends of all ages. One of my very good friends is Katie Lee, who's on the Cooking Channel.
Yes.
I just like fun, interesting people that do things, go places and do things.
We love seeing that you and Catherine have this nice friendship now. Are you surprised by how your relationship has turned out? If you look back at season one.
Well, you know, my main problem with her was twofold. First of all, there were the outbursts that I think were fueled by drugs. I mean, she had a problem. And also the way she attacked Whitney. And as a mother, you know, if somebody tells your child to fall on a knife, it doesn't make any difference how old they are. But she went to rehab and straightened herself out. And I admire that, because I think it takes some people many trips to rehab to get themselves, you know, off of whatever addiction they have. And some are never successful. So I thought that she did it after one time. She passed all her drug tests. I think those days of, you know, acting like crazy Catherine are behind her. And, you know, I admire her fortitude.
What can we expect from the show this season?
I think that the viewers are going to be surprised by many turns of events, by people who are new that rise to the occasion, who create situations that you couldn't even have imagined. And I think there'll be closure in some other regards.
And then lastly, I saw that you were with our beloved Captain Lee this weekend. So can you tell us what that was like to have those two worlds collide?
Well, Captain Lee and I had been emailing or texting back and forth, you know, every so often, because we both think that millennials as a group are morons. And we kind of have common ground in that, and we'll text each other, you know, when either his morons or my morons do something stupid, because he and I are old-fashioned and we do things the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
And we don't understand the way these, you know, young people behave or their attitudes. So we had a friendship based on that, through text. And then we had talked about having a crossover, what fun we thought it would be to have a crossover. And we just mentioned it on social media, and a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon. He told me that he and his wife were coming to Charleston, and did I have any suggestions? And I said, oh, well, let me just have a little party, and, you know, I'd love to show you Charleston, and I'll have some of the cast over, and you can see my morons up close. So when I was on Watch What Happens Live, I guess Captain Lee tweeted something, and Andy asked me if I knew Captain Lee, and I said yes, he and his wife are coming to Charleston. I was going to have a party. So there was a lot of interest on social media for that to happen. So I invited the cast members, whichever ones were here, and some of my friends, you know, older friends, and they could not have been more appreciative, gave them a tour of the house. Michael and I drove them around Charleston the day before. And they had been here before, but, you know, we gave them our little tour. And they loved it so much. Mary Ann, the wife, wants to move here at some point.
Oh, that's good.
So, yeah, it was fun. We all had a good time. And, you know, we keep hoping that we could do a crossover because I think it would be funny. But
so funny.
In any case, everyone had a great time.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you're working on now.
I was with my friend Georgette in India, and I had a caftan that had Staffordshire dogs all over it. And I had paid a couple thousand dollars for it. And Georgette said, well, you know what? It's just one great big piece of fabric, and it doesn't have any embellishment. You know, we were in India where they do all of that. And we had a mutual friend who owned a factory. And we said, wouldn't it be great if we could put our own pet faces on caftans instead of these generic dogs? So they figured out a way of doing a silk screen. You take a photograph, send it in. We do a silk screen, send it to India. They put it on fabric and then embellish the neck. So it's a little fancier, and it's beautiful material. You can wash it, throw it in the dryer, always looks perfect. So we went from there. People wanted pajamas. So now we do pajamas, and we can do two pets on caftans and on pajamas. We just started baby bib and baby blanket. I gave Andy one that had Waka on it. We have socks. We have big blankets. I've got silk scarves. I mean, an Hermes scarf will cost you, what, $600 or something? And we have the same quality scarves that you can put your pet's face on. And we've done everything from iguanas, dogs, cats, fish, goat, horses. But if we have a successful run on something, then we take the proceeds and we donate it to an animal rescue.
Oh, great.
That's right. So that's our main concern. I mean, it's fun to do, but also there's a benefit to it.
So how can people find the website to order?
It's Patricia's Couture, all one word, .com.
Terrific. And then where can they find you on social media?
Well, Pat Altschul. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. Facebook. I kind of repeat what I do on Instagram. Patricia's Couture has an Instagram. And if you go on that, you can see the steps are all lined up. You know, how you take the photograph, what happens, where it's sent, how much it costs, and everything is on the website, all of our items. We even do Christmas ornaments.
And then where can people find your book?
On Amazon. It's called The Art of Southern Charm.
Terrific.
And people are always asking me everything from etiquette to skincare to what books I read, everything. Everything I can think of, I put in that book. The trouble is it keeps changing. You know, I keep adding things or subtracting things in terms of skincare because I think to look younger, I have this theory that to look younger, you need to have the best, the whitest teeth you can have. I mean, I have my own teeth, but I have them cleaned every 3 months, and I have my little whitening kit. I think your skin has to be clear, and I have a dermatologist in every city. and I do use products, but I'm reluctant to tell people what I use because I have rosacea. And so my skin care is going to be different. Everybody should go to a dermatologist and get a precise, individualized treatment plan.
Yeah.
Because, you know, mine wouldn't be for everybody.
Right.
But I do think that that's really important.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. This has been so fun getting to know you. And please send our best to Michael.
I certainly will. I mean, he has turned into the biggest fame whore on the face of the earth.
We have all heard about the anti-aging benefits of collagen for great skin, hair, and nails. I have found an easy and delicious way to incorporate it into my daily routine with Nutri Super Premium Collagen Drink Mix. I can barely remember to make myself breakfast, let alone take vitamins. But Nutri makes it so easy to do something good for myself, so I no longer have to remember to take a handful of different pills each day. I just add the berry pomegranate flavor to a glass of ice water. Nutri Super Premium Collagen is a supercharged form of collagen. They have 23 ingredients, including keratin, biotin, and important vitamins that boost results for healthier skin, hair, and nails. I want you to try Nutri's great supplements too. So if you order now, I've arranged for a special offer for my listeners. You're going to get 15% off your entire order when you use my promo code REALITY. So to get this great offer, go to NUTRII.com today and use my code REALITY. That's an N as in nutrition, UTRII.com. Nutri.com, promo code REALITY. Who in your family is the best storyteller? My sister would agree that I'm the best one in mine. For that person, the greatest gift is StoryWorth. StoryWorth makes it really easy and fun for your loved ones to share their stories with weekly emailed story prompts, questions you've probably never thought to ask. And you get to know great stories about your relatives, the questions that really elicit entertaining, surprising, and sometimes moving responses. And at the end of the year, they get the stories bound in a beautiful hardcover book. This is a fantastic Father's Day gift. It's something I'm having my kids gift to my husband. This way, he can share great memories from his childhood to keep the memory of his dad, Barney, still alive. For example, he can talk about all the summers he spent with his dad in Hawaii, surfing and eating shave ice and malasadas. Those are the things that my kids really treasure. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go for $20 off to storyworth.com/reality. You're going to purchase a subscription to someone you love, and each week, Storyworth sends them an email with questions about their life, and they simply reply to the email with their story. So for $20 off, visit storyworth.com/reality when you subscribe. Patrick, you've been in a million things. You're still super handsome. How are you?
I love you. I love you, Kate. Good morning.
You're from the LA area. You went to USC. You have two Rose Bowl rings, played football at USC. I cannot imagine how many high fives you get in the city of Los Angeles just for that. Do you walk through town on people's shoulders?
not so much the way that USC's been playing lately, but it did play. You know, I'm born and raised here. I'm kind of had, you know, my father was a beach lifeguard at Venice Beach, so I kind of had like a super cliche upbringing in LA, and playing for SC was a blast. Still, my best friends are from the team to this day. And and I lost one of my Rose Bowl rings. So I only have one now.
Oh,
but we did. I'm still looking for it.
People probably stop you all the time. What do they stop you for most? Days of Our Lives, movies that you've been in, or now is it just by knowing Lisa Rinna and Denise Richards?
Lately, it's from knowing Lisa and Denise, because I had no idea. Well, first of all, I remember I got a call from Denise and Aaron saying, hey, want to come to our wedding? And I was like, of course. And they were like, okay, it's in 2 days.
Oh, my God.
So it was shotgun. But my mom watches Real Housewives of Beverly Hills religiously, and she always has. And so, you know, whenever I'm at their house, I get locked in too. So when I told her after I went to Denise's wedding, I go, Ma, you know, I don't know, you know, because you never know how they're going to edit it, but I think I might be on the show when it's the episode for Denise's wedding. So I had no idea just how popular the show is. I think it's something like 170 countries.
Oh yeah.
And I did get cornered. I got cornered. I had no idea. I think sometimes people think that, and maybe some reality shows are scripted to some extent, but let me tell you, on this show, there is no scripting. It's all a big surprise. So when Lisa came up to me at the show and kind of called me out on some of my behavior back in the 90s, it was a total shock. So I'm getting a lot of flack for that.
By the way, pretty funny if you think about it, that you had this romantic relationship with Lisa Rinna, considering she played your sister on a TV show. Does that creep you out at all in retrospect?
Well, I'll tell you what, when that was going on, you know, we were back in the day, you were there from like 6 a.m. to 6 p.m, 8 p.m. It didn't matter. Like we were in NBC. We spent more time as those characters than we did as ourselves. So it was a little creepy. And when that was going on, I remember, and Lisa can talk about this because it freaked both of us out. On soap operas, you're always scared of being fired, right? Yeah. You could be fired because people come in and they get let go. And even though we were both kind of popular at the time, when that was going on, we're like, oh my God, if anyone finds out, we're getting fired. And there was this one scene that we were shooting, and they stopped the scene, and the producer, Francesca, came down and grabbed both of us and said, you know, and we thought we were being discreet, you know, your brother-sister relationship has become really strange.
Gross.
And so you know, it was, I guess it was kind of showing up in the scenes. And that's when we knew that we had been found out and we were totally scared of being fired. So, yeah, it was a little weird, but
I mean,
that's what was up.
It's a little bit of a flowers in the attic kind of vibe I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love how much you get along with all of these exes, which says so much about you as a person, which is great. And then you dated Denise after you've known each other for many, many years. You started dating during Starship Troopers, but she says that.
But that's not true.
Oh,
we started dating. And by dating, she was 19. I was 21. And we were in an acting class and we didn't do Starship Troopers till we were like 27-ish, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah. So we would date a little bit here and there. So it's actually Denise and I met each other first.
So tell me what's going on in your life now. Now, I know you're not single, correct?
I am not single. No, no.
But we're keeping that person's identity on the DL.
On the deal.
Okay.
Yeah. She's my, I've been in on again, off again relationship for a long time. What else am I doing? Oh, I released a music EP for my new band. It's called Muldoon and Ives.
Nice.
So if you go to iTunes, Spotify, whatever, Muldoon and Ives, I-V-E-S, just put out an EP. So a lot of people don't know that my favorite thing to do in life is songwriting. So, I just put out 4 tunes and this morning I'm speaking to you, because there's a Robert De Niro movie shooting, starting next Friday. And, I'm a producer on that. So
listen to you.
So awesome. Yeah. So I'm juggling, you know, Kate, I'm juggling. But anyway, that's what's up. And the housewives thing was like, and you don't know, you sweat how they're going to edit it.
Because really?
You don't know. Because, of course, we didn't just say what we said. They filmed more. And when they came out and filmed Denise and I on set, you know, and there was that when I went to her house, and we kind of reminisced for a bit, but they were very kind. They were very cool. So I'm very grateful to the editors of Housewives of Beverly Hills, because they could have spun that in a way of like, oh my God, what a scumbag, right?
Right. No. Well, you're not a scumbag, so it's
Not a scumbag.
It's not hard to edit around that.
I think so many people watch Housewives and they don't admit that they watch Housewives, right?
Totally.
So for me, when I the first time I was meeting all the Housewives, other than Lisa and Denise, right, the ones that I didn't know, I was kind of, you know, fanboyed. I fanboyed out. I'm like, oh my God, you know, when I was Lisa Vanderpool, right? I said her name right? Right, Lisa Vanderpool.
Vanderpump.
Vanderpump. When I saw her, and her husband, I fanboyed out, and I went, "Oh my God!" You know, my mom watches the show, and it's almost like I wanted to get an autograph from my mom. And right. Then I realized, with the cameras there, that you're never supposed to reference the show when you're on the show. So I made that mistake. I made that reality show. Mistake. And also the wedding was the first time that I met Aaron.
Oh, why?
We just had never met in person. So that was the first time that I met Aaron. So
okay.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you guys get along great.
I'm super great. And the next thing, like the next week, Aaron came, and Denise came to my birthday party, and Aaron met the family, and I'm happy for her because he is a very, very sweet, kind guy, which is new for her.
Yeah. Well, like, do you ever run into Charlie Sheen ever? And it sounds like he was not happy about you guys being friends all those years. So do you ever run into him? And if you do run into him, does he try to strangle you?
He doesn't try and strangle me. The thing about Charlie, and I have run into Charlie, and I have to say he is very disarmingly charming. He's hilarious. He's got that thing about him where you hear all the press about him, whatever, but when you see him in person, like, we ran into each other by accident, and you know, I didn't know which way that was going to go, but he was absolutely sweet and hilarious, actually.
What's the one thing that we would be surprised to know about Denise and Lisa that we don't see watching Real Housewives?
You know, they kind of put it out there. You really get the essence of Denise and Lisa. I mean, they're both really funny, and they're both really funny together. And I think that's what the show captures. They're good friends, and they're both super sweet, but they're both can be super tough. You know, they're both business women and all that. But I think the show kind of captures that. And that's why, when I watch, they're my favorite on the show.
Tell everybody where they can track you down.
They can track, I'm at Muldoon Patrick on Twitter. I'm the Patrick Muldoon on Instagram. And also the band called Muldoon and Ives. If you go on iTunes or Spotify or whatever platform you use, we're on there. And we also have at Muldoon and Ives on Twitter and at Muldoon and Ives on Instagram. So I think I covered it.
With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house, but I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you gotta get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're gonna love it. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. Brandon Alvarado told me that I was missing out on an HGTV show. Normally, I watch HGTV only at the nail salon, so I thought, okay, I'll give it a try. This show's called, well, this is up for debate, actually. Is it Caribbean Life or Caribbean Life? Because I've been saying Caribbean my entire life. You say Caribbean, right?
I say Caribbean. I know a lot of people say Caribbean, thanks to Johnny Depp and Pirates of the Caribbean. So I know we've moved over to that. I find that the guy who narrates the show has a funny way of pronouncing anything. Like, he doesn't say Cayman Islands. He says the Grand Cayman.
You wanted me to watch this one episode, which was from season 15. It's episode 6, about a gay couple that went to the Dominican Republic to go look for vacation properties. And this show, I should add, it follows people as they leave the mainland life behind them because they want to find a vacation home.
Yes, and I have to set the scene up for you, if you don't mind, because I don't watch HGTV normally. I actually, as you get your nails done, you watch it there. I actually watch it while I get my hair cut.
Oh.
So I don't watch it at home, but I did.
Where do you get your hair cut? Where are you getting your hair cut? At a nail salon?
I get my hair cut at this random barbershop, and the woman has a television there and she likes to watch HGTV. So she has that show on. She's like, this is great. I'm like, all right. So I go home and I'm watching it, and I was watching like a whole marathon. I got really sucked into it because there were a few episodes of these like great couples who were moving to the Caribbean or Caribbean with seemingly moving to the Caribbean, seemingly with a lot of money. Like there were some nice places because I assume HGTV is kind of like a house porn kind of channel. I mean,
totally.
That's what I always assumed.
Yeah.
So I'm like drinking a little, I'm watching. And then this episode comes along, and I'm excited to talk about it with you because this episode came in. It was kind of a game changer. I hate to be rude, but it was. I sobered up quickly.
Well, let me start off by saying I don't know if I believe all these people have the money to get a vacation home altogether. I feel like some of them are from Central Casting. I just don't believe it. Now this couple. I don't really get how they have extra money to buy a home in the Dominican Republic. From what I understand, Cliff and Ellerson, they're in business together doing coffee shops. I was not aware that a bunch of espressos can afford you a side property. Do you believe this?
No, I don't believe it one bit. None at all. There was actually an episode where there was a couple moving with this young child, like actually a baby, and they were like, we have to leave basically by tomorrow. So I was like, oh, they're running away from the car. Like, they did something bad. Like, I was like, they did something really bad in New York where they're from, and they have to, because they were like, we can build you this entire property. It's going to be gorgeous. And he goes, no, I can't do it. We have to leave. We have to leave the country by next week.
Oh my God. They murdered somebody. They murdered their nanny.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right?
The other thing that's weird about the show is that they get a local realtor to show them properties. And I get the sense that this realtor in particular has no shit what she's talking about.
None.
Not a clue in the world. Okay, let's talk about the couple for a second. I do believe they're... I could believe they're together, but I don't understand why they're together. Cliff is approximately 97 years old. Ellerson is like an easy 45. I don't get the sense they ever make out. The only intimacy that I saw was when they were eating passion fruit on the beach. So I get distracted from some of the storylines on the Caribbean/Caribbean life because not only am I doubting that these people have enough money to buy a property, I'm doubting the real estate agents, and then I'm starting to doubt whether or not they're actually a real couple.
I actually found myself doing the same thing because I don't know. I feel like, and you're married, so you can tell me what it'd be like to move to the Caribbean and have like truly no friends. I think about this often every time I watch the show, which is now frequent. I'm watching this every week. I really do. I watch it every week and I find myself worried about the couples because a lot of them, I don't remember if this couple did, but a lot of couples come in and they're like, oh, this kitchen's absolutely fabulous. It's perfect to host parties. I'm like, with who? Where are the parties? Like, oh, our family. Yeah, who's coming over? You're living in the middle of nowhere. You can invite the locals if you want, but you have no friends here. And then they keep saying, a lot of the couples say things like, oh, our family's going to come visit. Absolutely. We know that's not happening, right? Like,
what are
these couples? Like, can you please tell me, Kate, like, what this couple would do every day besides eating passion fruit?
And eat chocolate and play dominoes. They're not doing anything. I'm telling you right now, I'm married. I have kids. I never go on vacation. I'm never going to some remote place. First of all, if you have kids, the last thing you want to do is get on a plane, especially on a plane to another plane to another plane to a place that I don't even know if it has running water. It's not like there's a Starbucks around the corner. There's like shacks. And I have to tell you, in some of these scenes, you see the locals in the background and the locals look like, I cannot wait until they stop filming because one of us is going to get a machete and take their cell phones.
Yes. And you know what? I picture, like, I don't know, like, Caribbean life, the reason why I'm so fascinated is because I think a lot of people, I guess including myself, would believe that it's, like, total paradise every day. But then you realize you're actually living in hell because every morning you're waking up and you're looking, like, pretend that we're this couple. Every morning you would wake up, look at me outside, of, like, on the balcony, and I would just say to you, truly every morning, isn't this view stunning? And just, like, point to blue water. I'm like, isn't this what we're here for? You would murder me after 2 weeks.
I know. And they probably don't have any DirecTV. So I don't know what they're going to do all day. I mean, you can only have as many mojitos as you can. I mean, it's too much sugar content anyway. You probably get diabetes. I just don't see it. I don't see. No one's going to visit you. You're not going to make friends with the locals. Everything's overpriced. And the other thing about Cliff and Ellerson is that they really didn't want to have to purchase furniture. Some of these places had horrendous furniture. So they were going to buy these properties with the furniture it came with. And they did it. The furniture looked so ugly, outdated, not comfortable. This is like a depressing thing.
And sometimes it like veers into like what's like an SNL territory, like Saturday Night Live territory to me, because like people, they do, like these guys do come in, they're at this like totally ugly furniture. And they really like, this is incredible. Like, they're like, this is amazing. And it's sort of, it becomes like comical. It starts, I feel like we're being gaslit. They're like, all they're doing is just trying to convince us. They're like, this is absolutely stunning. This is exceptional, this place. And I don't know if we can do any better. Okay. Look at the view. Look at the water.
The one other question I had for you is, do you think that the producers encourage them to keep on going with the descriptions? For example, Ellerson goes into the bathroom and he went on and on about the size of the tiles in the bathroom. Or do they just keep like winking at him or waving their hand like, and more, give us more. Like, wow, the trim on this is really unbelievable. And can you believe these sinks?
Oh. I mean, I think they absolutely are encouraging them to just talk as much as they can about these. A lot of these, to be honest, a lot of shitholes that they're like walking into.
They are shitholes.
They're like, fuck it up.
That's all they talked about. But what they do in between each segment is they give you a dumb quiz. And it's a quiz about the location. And it's like, what can you do in the Dominican Republic, if you've got some time on your hands? And they give you three options. I'm like, I don't want to take a goddamn quiz when I'm watching a show.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something. It's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened in my life. And I need you to come with, I just need you to go with me on this journey, because I'm not kidding. I'm not even, this is real. So as I told you before, when I watched the marathon of the show, I was drinking, and I was specifically drinking an Aperol Spritz like I was Teddy Mellencamp on a vacation. And I'm sitting on the couch watching the show, and the question comes up, and I turn to my dog, thinking it was a human for a second, and go, I wasn't here to take a quiz. Like, no.
I believe it, though. It's bullshit. Just show me the show. I don't need a quiz.
Right? And then the answer popped up, and I remember going, fuck, because I got the wrong answer.
What they should show you is the real estate agent back at their office going through file cabinets. Whoa. Or what they do. Because I really, honestly, God, that woman was not a real estate agent. Can you do me a favor and help me research whether or not they actually bought that property? Because I still don't believe it. I believe they're still living in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Should anybody live there, I'd like for them to go to their one of their coffee shops.
I will absolutely help. I will also, like, I was also trying to deep dive on some cast members to see if I can find an Instagram. I have not found one, by the way.
Oh.
So if anyone actually, like, if anybody has any, like, Instagram links or Twitter profiles about any of the people, anybody on this show, please, like, send it our way. Because I genuinely want to know what's going on, because I could not find a single, I mean, they don't really give the last things on the show, but like, I just feel like I have not been able to find one profile related to anybody on the show.
So you think they're all made up?
Yes. I somehow think they're all like hologram. Like, I feel like they're just all made from computers. We're not watching real people. We're just watching like a hologram.
Okay, well, where can people track you down? If they want to give you information about cast members on Caribbean/Caribbean life and whether or not they're real people.
Guys, if you guys could do that, that would be such a dream. I'm on Instagram at TheBrandonAlvarado. Please DM me and please send me that. And I'm also on Twitter at TheBAlvarado. And I'm also in your Facebook group, so you can also post it there, and I'm happy to see it.
The Amazing Kate
I want to thank my awesome guests this week, Patricia Altschul, Patrick Muldoon, and Brandon Alvarado. This is so important. Subscribe to the show, my show, on iTunes, and click on the reviews and do a 5-star review. Thank you so much for all the reviews, and I'm inching my way towards 3,000 reviews, so thank you so much. Join the Facebook page. What are you doing? Too many people come up to me and say, gosh, you know, I'm not in the Facebook group. I don't know why you're not, because you're missing out on hours of entertainment all week long. You're watching a show on TV. You're thinking to yourself, God, this is a dumpster fire. Wonder if someone else is watching it. Well, guess what? They are. So go into the Facebook group and find your people, because we want to rip apart these shows just like you do. You can also find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I'm always tweeting about shows, during shows, throughout the week. You can find me on Instagram. I know you guys are following a bunch of people on Instagram. You're asking yourself, why am I following the account of the person that I met in the hallway at school 5 years ago? I got news for you. I don't know either. But you should be following me, because I've got funny pictures all week long, and I'm posting about who I'm going to be interviewing. For example, I'm going to be interviewing Sonia Morgan. If you have a question for her, send it my way on Instagram. DM me. I always write you back. As always, thank you so much for watching so much television. It's nice to know other people that are obsessed with television the way that I am. And circle back next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.